We're pleased to be with you all today and welcome you to the Fourth Circuit. Chief Judge Traxler, who should be presiding today, is deferring to me to do that. He's in Greenville, South Carolina, and you see him on the monitor. we have four interesting cases, and we look forward to the arguments of counsel. In case number one, Cadwell versus the Commissioner of Internal Revenue, Mr. Ryan.
May it please the court, good morning. My name is Kevin Ryan, and I'm counsel for G. Mason Cadwell, who is the taxpayer and petitioner in this matter. By quick summary, in 2002, Mr. and Mrs. Cadwell, married couple with two children, had through an entity called Keedy Limited, formed a welfare benefit plan and trust. And it was put into place, and the benefits involved were life insurance and severance benefits for Mr. Cadwell and for their two children, adult children, who worked in their business. Keedy Limited is a subchapter S corporation. It is owned 100% by Mrs. Cadwell and was owned 100% by Mrs. Cadwell at all times relevant to this proceeding. KSM is a limited partnership of which Keedy is the general partner. At all times relevant to this matter, Mrs. Cadwell owned 95% interest in KSM. Her husband, the taxpayer, Mr. Cadwell, owned 2%, and the daughters each owned 1.5%. In 2002, KSM issued checks to form the plan and paid monies into that plan. At that time, the plan was known as a 419 AF6 plan, which is a multiple employer welfare benefit plan under Section 419 of the Internal Revenue Code. Nothing happened in 2003. In 2004, KSM again made a contribution to the plan. That was done in the summer of 2004. In neither instance did KSM, Keedy, the Cadwells, or any third party take an income tax deduction for contributions to that plan. In the latter part of 2004.
What's KSM do for business?
KSM has several businesses. They're involved in a coal to steam operation in western Pennsylvania where they take slag coal and convert it to steam, which is then converted to energy, electricity. They also own a farm.
And your man's the manager, the president, or secretary, or what is he?
My man is a manager in KSM, and he is the secretary of Keedy Limited. So he participates.
Keedy and manager of KSM.
Yeah, Keedy is the management company for KSM. Mm-hmm.
And it was KSM that made the payments to this multi-employer benefit plan?
That's correct.
Not Keedy.
Not Keedy. At the direction of Mrs. Cadwell.
Now, does he get paid anything for these jobs?
During the period of time between 2002 and 2004, he did not take any income.
There was no income from either of them.
Right.
To him. Well, and then in 2004, there was a change from multi-employer to single employer.
That's correct.
And that's the event that the government or the taxpayer or the IRS man says was the triggering event that created a tax liability.
It is now, yes. It began as a great deal larger, involved with
And were you involved
many
in back then?
Excuse me?
Were you involved in the legal advice to them back then?
To the Cadwells? Yes, I was.
Okay. You're the Ryan that's referred to in the opinion.
I'm the Ryan who wrote the opinion.
I'm talking the opinion for the you wrote the opinion
of the tax court, yes.
You wrote the opinion for
and
the
I
tax
wrote
court?
The opinion in 2005 for the plan itself, 3 years after.
No, I'm talking about the opinion of the tax court.
Yes, I'm the Ryan.
Was written by the judge.
Correct.
Mr. Wells, Judge Wells?
Correct.
You wrote it for him?
No, sir. I'm sorry. I did not write the opinion.
It went against you. I mean, but you gave them an opinion there that this event was taxable.
I gave them an opinion that if a tax deduction was taken by an entity, that a tax and inclusion for the amount of the cost of the life insurance had to be given to the taxpayer on a 1099-R form and reported on the taxpayer's individual tax return. That's correct. That was not done, but no deduction was taken by anyone either.
So your opinion was qualified to that extent, and it really doesn't control here, you don't think?
I don't, only because I think the substance of the transaction is that Mrs. Cadwell, for whatever reason, took after-tax dollars, there's no question these are after-tax dollars, and paid for this plan. What she intended, did she intend to take a deduction?
I thought KSM paid the money.
Yeah, at Mrs. Cadwell's direction, KSM paid the money. That's correct, sir.
And no deduction was taken?
No deduction was taken. That's correct.
Go ahead.
Okay.
But before you do so, where did you get this notion that a deduction would have this effect, that if we take a deduction, then it would trigger the liability?
The notion is from the idea that if you took a deduction for payment of the term life insurance, that you're required then to submit a 1099-R, I believe it is, to any employee who received the benefit of that, and they needed to take it on their income tax return as income.
And that is true for a single employee benefit plan?
That's correct. Couple interesting facts before I get into legal argument. One, there is no finding of facts in this case. If you look at the judge's opinion, he states on page 222 that he's going to issue a separate order regarding the facts, which has never been done. He also states in 221 that he is going to may I get a drink of water?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
On page 221 of the opinion, he also states that he's going to issue a separate order dismissing our motion to amend the petition, which order has never been filed.
Are those issues that you raised in your brief? I don't remember reading about that in the brief.
There
was some deficiency in the proceedings
In the proceedings and in the facts as established. We do argue that, yes.
But you put that in the brief?
Specifically alluding to that? No, I don't, sir.
That's what I thought.
Okay. Our first argument was one of substance over form. What actually happened here? And I submit to the court, nothing happened here. We have a totally non-taxable intra-family situation with a controlled company by Mrs. Cadwell that goes out and purchases life insurance and a severance benefit for her husband and for her two daughters, not even for herself. For whatever reason, she funds that through KSM. But either way, in 2002, KSM did not take an income tax deduction. So Mrs. Cadwell paid income tax on any monies that came through KSM or KEDI in those years. In 2004, those entities were audited. KEDI got a no change letter and nothing happened with the KSM audit, meaning that there was no change, no deduction was taken that shouldn't have been, no deduction was taken at all. So what did we start with? We started with Mrs. Cadwell having money. We ended up with Mrs. Cadwell having her husband and two daughters with life insurance policies and with no tax consequence and no tax event occurring at any point.
So your position is that he earned nothing for the services that he rendered for running this business?
He earned nothing, and his wife basically provided this for him the way a spouse could provide anything for their spouse.
We argued here somewhere that it was a gift.
That's correct. It would be considered a gift.
So you agree that the amounts are correct, that it was a gift? It was a gift of $100,000 to him?
No, I would not agree with that.
You don't agree with the amounts?
No.
Well, how much do you agree it was a gift for? You say it was a gift. I mean, the government says it's taxable income.
Okay.
For $99,000 and some dollars. And you say it's a gift, but you don't agree with the amount.
I misunderstood. The entire amount that was paid into the plan would be a gift. That's, in fact, greater, I believe, than the $100,000.
Okay. 106?
Well, if you look at it, remember, there were costs of the insurance as time went on. So whatever was gifted in 2002, there was a life insurance component. That came out in 2002. In 2003, there was nothing gifted, but a life insurance component was paid out of the plan. 2004, a life insurance component was paid out of the plan. So you had three different things, plus you had a plan administrator charging a fee for this. I think it was about $2,600 a year. So actually, in the end, the $100,000 was shy of the total amount gifted by the amount of administrative costs and the amount of cost of life insurance for 2002 and 2003.
Tell me about this gift. Was that out of the wife's personal account?
No. It was out of KSM, which she controlled. But if she had written a check to herself and then to the plan, we probably wouldn't be sitting here today.
Well, that's called distributable, but it wasn't distributed. Is that right?
That's correct. She paid taxes on it.
So it's corporate money, and the corporation pays
money.
It.
Mm-hmm.
So why is it a gift from the spouse? She didn't give it out of her money.
She had control over the money. She paid taxes on the money. The only difference is she didn't write the check. So we're talking there that the form of the transaction does not meet the substance of the transaction.
So you're saying this, the corporation made a gift, and we should therefore say the wife made the gift because basically she owned most of the corporation.
The partnership, yes, sir.
Partnership.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Because there's no difference between her taking the money out.
Where has that been held in such a way? Where has it been held that a spouse can give a gift through a partnership, that a partnership gives a gift, and then ultimately it is determined the partner or the main partner in it is the one who gave a gift to a husband?
Well, sir, let me answer it this way. If Mrs. Cadwell had taken KSM funds and, in fact, used them in the same fashion but for herself, and you were to tax them, she would be paying taxes on them twice, once for earning them through the partnership and a second time for having paid them out for her own benefit. Why, in fact, should she pay taxes twice on the same money?
You'd have to rewrite the books to do all that after the fact, wouldn't you?
Well, rewrite the books or simply break down the transaction and say the substance of the transaction was that she paid for the plan, whereas the form of the transaction was not. But at the same time, in this same matter, the court argues that the form of the matter doesn't matter.
Well, the corporate form of a partnership and a personal situation matters. I mean, that's why you have a partnership. It has to do with liability. You want us to collapse it here for purposes of a gift, but from a liability perspective, you want to keep it separate. How do we do that?
I don't know how you would do that from a liability standpoint.
Why would we do it is the question.
Because the substance is exactly as I stated. The substance of the transaction is monies that Mrs. Cadwell earned through her partnership and claimed on her income tax and paid taxes on were then subsequently directed by her to be used in a non-taxable transaction for a family member.
But this is not about taxes that Mrs. Cadwell owed. It's about taxes that the petitioner, her husband, owes. And it's about a benefit that he has received from a partnership. And there's nothing that I see in this section of the code that says that deductions would therefore mean that it cannot be gross income.
All right. In that case, then, in 2002, Mr. Cadwell should have received income and did, in fact, accede to wealth. The amount of money that was paid in 2002, that is not an issue before us because it is a tax-closed year. Therefore, those monies should not be considered when the actual monies are constructively, and remember, he has never received a dime from this plan, nor has his daughters. And the IRS concedes that through the end of 2005, Neither Mr. Cadwell, Mrs. Cadwell, KDKSM, or the daughters ever attempted to access the monies that were in this plan.
In the tax court, they said it was vested in, when they vested in him, when they changed the status of it from multi-employer to single employer in 2004. Then that's the crucial event, correct?
Correct. Yes, sir. And here's how that works. The court found, without factual basis, that there was a substantial risk of forfeiture of that plan in 2002, 3, and 4 until it changed to a single employer plan. And the reason it said that was that all of a sudden, Mrs. Cadwell had the ability, or Mr. Cadwell, to terminate the plan. Well, if the court would look at pages 72 and 172 of the appendix, you'll see that Mr. Cadwell or Mrs. Cadwell or any officer of Keedy could have terminated that plan as a multiple employer plan or as a single employer plan on 30 days notice. So the change from multiple to single did not change the risk of forfeiture at all. The second...
Your red light's on. That means your time's up. Before you sit down.
Yes, sir.
Chief Judge Traxler, we haven't heard from you. Do you have any questions at this point in time?
No, thank you. It's fine to proceed.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Ryan. You have some rebuttal time.
Yes, sir.
Reserved.
Thank you.
Mr. Hutter?
Good morning. Thank you, and may it please the court. I'd first like to say that Mr. Ryan is exactly correct. On one point, if this had been done differently, we might not be here. The point is, it wasn't done differently. It was done exactly as your honors have seen, not as a personal gift from Mrs. Cadwell. The court rejected that idea because there's no gift evidence that they have shown or offered into the record. They, as far as I know, there were no gift tax returns filed. There was a money. It was there were checks directly from KSM to the plan for the on behalf of Keedy. It was maybe distributable, but it was not distributed. Therefore, the tax court correctly found that the money was in the possession of KSM and the payments were from KSM, and they offered no proof that this was a gift from Mrs. Cadwell. This is not a family transaction. This is compensation going from an employer to an employee. That's essential for there to be a welfare benefit plan in the first place. A family can't start a welfare benefit plan.
And the employer here is who?
Keedy.
KSM?
Keedy.
Keedy's the employer.
Keedy is
the... I thought it was KSM's money.
It is KSM's money. Don't confuse me, Your Honor. No. it is KSM's money. KSM's money is the only source of income for Keedy, but the taxpayer, Mr. Cadwell, is an officer or an officer, the secretary.
He's the secretary of Keedy.
Yes, he is.
And the manager, they say, of KSM.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. So KSM paid this on behalf of Keedy because that's where the money was. Why should it go to Keedy? Why should it go through another step? And they just took it directly from KSM. And it's compensation to an employee. Mr. Cadwell has to be an employee to qualify for these benefits. So it's not a gift. It's not a family transaction. It's a business transaction. And the fact that they didn't take a deduction for it, that nobody took a deduction for it at the beginning, is not relevant. That's the court pointed to the statutes 402B, regulations under 83. The question is whether Mr. Cadwell's rights in the plan became substantially vested, and they became substantially vested in 2004 upon the conversion of the welfare benefit plan from a multi-employer plan to a single employer plan, because at that point, there were no more pooled assets for the benefits to be paid out. It was one pool, one segregated trust of assets dedicated to pay Mr. Cadwell's benefits. And given his connection and his position in the company, there was virtually no chance he was never going to get those benefits. You see, when Keedy first made the contributions to the welfare benefit plan, those contributions went into a pool that were that was funded by contributions from several multiple employers, hence the name Multiple Employer Plan. They were available to pay the claims.
Now, regarding the contributions that are made for the single employee plan and the deductibility of it, could KSM or KEDI have taken a deduction for those?
I believe, theoretically, they could have. The IRS might have challenged those on one ground or another, but I'm not sure. I have seen, let's put it this way, I've certainly seen cases in the past where companies have taken deductions for those contributions.
What is the effect of taking the deduction? The other side mentioned that there is a tax form, a 1099, that then needs to be issued to show a tax liability on the part of the, I guess, the beneficiary or the person who receives the contributions.
Yes.
So but it becomes a taxable, if a deduction is taken, then there's no question that they receive a statement indicating your tax.
Yes. But
if no deduction is taken, why does the law not also say you have to issue a 1099?
Well, all I can say is that the statute in this case simply provides that whether a 1099 is issued or not, perhaps KSM or KEDI should have issued a 1099 for that income. I'm not sure that that was correct or not.
You're saying the statute says whether a deduction is taken or not, a 1099 must
no.
be issued, or
no,
only if a deduction is taken?
Regardless of whether a deduction was taken, this can be income to the employee if his rights became substantially vested.
How does he know that? I mean, in the case of a deduction, you know it by the 1099, but what tells an employee? I mean, typically when you know a tax event is occurring, an employer sends you something that says, hey, you owe some tax on this, or
right.
here's your income.
Yes.
What was done here?
In this case, in the usual case, you have many employees in a corporation, in a partnership or something, and if something like that is done, you will get a 1099. However, not in my case, for example. I get life insurance through my employer. But I'm not taxed on any of it because I pay the premiums, and there's a very limited amount of benefit that's going to that year by year. It's not building up benefits in the future, and I never can have access to that. So I don't have to get a 1099.
Don't confuse me.
All right.
With your plan, because that is beginning to be a little confusing, because I know there are plans in which pre-tax dollars pay for
yes.
certain things and some that don't. But I'm just curious in the effect of this deduction is the fact that at least the argument from the other side seems to indicate that it's sort of up to the employer as to whether something is going to be deductible or not. And if the deduction is there, the fact that you don't take it doesn't mean that you couldn't have taken it. It just means you chose not to take it. It also doesn't mean that it becomes non-taxable. Because you didn't take it, you chose not to take it. It seems to me that's a partnership benefit, is it not? The deduction.
The partnership or the S corporation in question, if there's a tax deduction to be taken, they are the ones to take it, yes. Yes, but it could be the employee's income, whether they get a 1099 or not. How are they to know? That's your question. How are they to know?
That's what you said here, that they... Your client said this is a taxable event, and they owe tax on it, right?
Yes, exactly. Sure.
Some penalties.
But you're
saying they knew or should have known that it was a taxable event?
Yes, because Mr. Cadwell.
They tried to assert a good faith defense, and y'all wouldn't let them do it.
But Mr. Cadwell and Mrs. Cadwell knew what was going on, and they tried to assert the good faith defense at a very late stage. So that's a separate issue altogether, if you'd like to talk about that.
No,
we believe
I'm,
that.
But I'm just, that, what
I understand.
You said made me think of that they tried to come in and interpose good faith.
I understand.
And you all said that they're too late. They waited all the motions
well,
had been filed. And
if there was valid evidence here that they had gone to an advisor, and the advisor had looked at this very closely and said, no, you don't have taxable income, and here's why. We might have looked at that closely, but there was no such situation, no such circumstances in this case. Mr. Cadwell and Mrs. Cadwell, particular Mr. Cadwell, created this plan, knew what was going on because he was the brains behind it. He's going to know if he's got income because he's supposed to be getting tax advice. He's not an employee on the way down the line who doesn't know what the machinations of the managerial staff is doing. So he's fully aware of what contributions are being made and what the makeup of the benefits look like.
He said they relied on the accountant or something, right?
Yes, but the tax court clearly found that the accountant didn't even know the contributions were being made.
What about the, there was an entry in here, some of this money was entered on the books as horses.
Well, that's what one daughter thought it was and told the accountant that it was.
So you think that was innocently put on the book?
I do. And it has no relation here because it was taken off the books. It was not deducted. It does not enter into the calculations here at all. It's just further evidence that the accountant didn't have a clue what was going on, was not consulted in this regard to find
out. Maybe the accountant messed up here and they ought to be off the hook.
But the accountant doesn't even know what the transaction was. He didn't know from the get-go. So I'm going to give him all the credit since he seems to have been completely ignorant of the facts.
Is it clear, at least I'm fuzzy, in terms of whether the contributions that were made on behalf of petitioner to the multi-employer plan, were they non-taxable?
That is not at issue.
I understand, but I'm trying. The conversion is of interest.
It is
of issue, and if that's non-taxable, I'm trying to determine: is it that the single employee plan is just different, and that deals with the risks and the vested and all of that business?
Yes. Yes.
And that's why it becomes taxable.
Absolutely. That's absolutely true.
And that's the only reason I needed to kind of. I'm trying to differentiate the two.
Yes.
To understand
that's
what happened here
yes.
to cause a taxable event to happen.
Yes, Your Honor, because. Well, what the parties assume is, the parties assume, for the purposes of this case, that prior to 2004, the multiple employer plan was a 419 AF6 plan. And they are not questioning, the IRS is not questioning that there was no substantial, there was no vested interest in Mr. Cadwell in the benefits. It's just an assumption, and we go on from there. Now, the taxpayers raised in a motion for reconsideration the idea that, wait a minute, that should have been decided by the court. Well, the court had already decided, put in a footnote and in its opinion, that the parties were not challenging that issue. And so it was not going to be decided, and a motion for reconsideration is too late to raise that issue. So the parties and the court all assumed that prior to the conversion, Mr. Cadwell's interests were not substantially vested because it was a legitimate, it was supposedly a 419 AF6 plan. Does that answer your question?
It does, but the petition also makes a big deal out, at least brings up the point. He didn't choose to convert this plan. It sort of was involuntary. Does that affect it?
No, not at all, not at all. Because yes, it had to happen, but there are tax consequences. If you own stock in Apple and all of a sudden it declares a benefit, a dividend of $2.50 a share, I'm sorry, you have income. You had that stock, you've got the income. Involuntary events happen all the time. And that had no consequence to this whatsoever.
Now, what about that point? Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I'm fine.
The point that Mr. Ryan mentioned early on about the judge messed up and didn't follow up, he said, on findings of fact and with an opinion on the motion to amend.
There are a couple of footnotes in the opinion that are a little bit possibly without foundation. In one footnote, the court says certain facts have been established in a prior order. Well, I couldn't find any such order, but they are clearly findings of fact in this opinion that the court issued.
It relates the facts.
Well, yes, it's a summary judgment motion, so he doesn't.
Of course, don't make findings of fact.
That's
anyway,
absolutely true.
In
that's
summary
absolutely
judgment.
True. Yes.
I mean, I thought on summary judgment, unless it's different in the tax court, the facts had to be taken in the light most favorable to the taxpayer.
That is correct, and they are. There are no findings
that should be the facts.
That's true. That's true. And there is a reference in another footnote that the court says we will be issuing a separate order with regard to denial of the motion to amend. It never issued that order. But this order denied the motion. This opinion denied the motion to amend nonetheless.
Okay.
So I don't see how those have any effect on the procedure. And I believe that the opinion, the decision here is a final decision that's appealable in all respects.
Right.
With regard to the other issues, actually, I don't know that there are, you know, the valuation of the policy, the valuation of the liability protection, whether the surrender charge should have been included or deducted from the value of the policy. I don't know if the court, we've addressed these issues in our brief a great deal, and if I've answered all your questions.
As far as you're concerned, it's an all or nothing proposition.
It is.
Well, you've got two cases that seem to support at least petitioner's position, the Booth case and the Olmo case.
Yes, Your Honor.
That seems to say the fact that it's an only employee is not dispositive of it. How do you distinguish those cases, or do you think they have any impact here?
No, Your Honor, we don't think they have any impact at all. In the Booth case was making a distinction between a welfare benefit situation and deferred compensation, and held that just because an employer can terminate a plan at will, it doesn't automatically make it deferred compensation. Deferred compensation is not at issue here. So the facts and all of that don't matter. It's substantially vested is the issue here, and substantially vested was not discussed in the Booth case. So they're totally different standards, and the Booth case doesn't apply. In Olmo, there was a similar situation, but not exactly the same. In Olmo, the taxpayer raises that case to say, see, we were not, Mr. Cadwell was not fully vested. In fact, he was not at all vested under the plan and the benefits of this, in the plan benefits, and therefore can have no income. Number one, the terms of the plan say that vesting years means years of service in the company, not years of participation in the plan. So he'd been with this company since 1998. That's 6 years, and even under the plan, he's vested in the plan. But that doesn't matter, because the substantially vesting language in 83 and 402 don't look to whether you're vested under the plan. They take a broader look, and are you substantially vested in the assets? So it doesn't look at the terms of the plan. It looks at overall vesting. In Olmo, they did not have a conversion event. Therefore, they looked at the court looked at the vesting under the plan. The court did not have a situation where there was any conversion from one kind of trust to another to say, okay, with that, did you become all of a sudden substantially vested in all of the assets, in the benefits under the plan? Instead, all the court had was to look at the plan itself and say, are you substantially vested? Well, you're vested to 40% because that's what the plan terms say. So Olmo is a different situation. It doesn't have a conversion event, and therefore you don't look at the same. It's confusing, but it's because you still look at the word vesting. That's what's confusing. But it's a different kind of vesting. It's overall vesting versus vesting under the terms of the plan.
And Schwab and Lowe, and so far as valuation, do you have any comment on those cases?
Right. Schwab and Lowe say you take the consideration of the surrender value, the surrender charge when you're valuing a life insurance plan. They specifically said we do not look at the regulations under 83, section Treasury regulations 1.83.3H, I think maybe it was, because this is not the same situation as those cases. This is not a situation where there's been a conversion and things have been substantially vested. This is not a situation where we're valuing, in Schwab and Lowe, we're not valuing a plan, a policy that's still within a plan. We're valuing a policy that has already been distributed. It's been distributed. This is what you've got. Therefore, it said that those the surrender charge considerations in the other statute and regulations don't apply. They specifically say that they're different situations.
So the actual distribution in those cases is the differentiating factor and the fact that it was held in trust.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think I've covered most of what I want to say. Want to stress that this was, again, compensation paid by an entity to an employee. At the beginning, It was paid in the form of contributions to a pooled asset that, under the Internal Revenue Code, can be considered a non-taxable contribution. However, later on, when the conversion happened and the pool of assets became a single pool of asset dedicated solely to Mr. Cadwell's benefits, those contributions directly from Keedy to the pool of assets were directly contributions to Mr. Keedy, compensation to Mr. Keedy. They could no longer be used for the claims of other employers and other employees. They were dedicated to him. And under the terms of the statutes and the regulations, which admittedly are a little complicated, he became vested in those, and that's a taxable event.
Thank you, Mr. Hutter.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it very much. Judge Traxler, do you have anything? I'm sorry.
Judge King, your questions and those of Judge Wynn, as well as the arguments of counsel, have rendered me speechless.
I'll take that as a compliment, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Ryan?
Thank you, and thank you. I presume I'm part of that.
Yes, sir.
There is no question there is no actual receipt by Mr. Cadwell of anything in this case. It's in the opinion, it's conceded by the Internal Revenue Service.
You mean physical?
He physically never received anything.
Physically didn't get any. He didn't get $100,000 cash.
That's correct. And physically, the argument that things happen that you have no control over, such as getting a dividend from a corporation, is a little bit different.
Well, because let me make sure I understand that. Now, he didn't receive anything. Partnership pays for something for you, for which you get a benefit. You don't receive anything?
He didn't actually receive the benefit. He never received the severance payment. He never received the life insurance that were in the plan and owned by the plan. The argument the IRS makes and
the
argument that the
contributions made to those plans.
Correct.
On his behalf, right?
In accordance with the IRS, they were made to a multiple employer plan. No contributions were ever made to the single employer plan. And the IRS just admitted that they probably were not includable under the 419 AF6.
We're not talking about the single employee plan. We're talking about contributions to a multiple employee plan?
Correct. And there was never a contribution made to the single employer plan. The only reason they're claiming that this is a taxable event is that when it became a single plan.
In the same year.
In the same year, when it became the single plan.
Isn't that the way the IRS works? I mean, if you get it during the course of the year and it benefits you, you're kind of stuck during that year.
If you are substantially vested, and the way the court got to substantial vesting was to say that husband and wives should be treated differently than business partners. They said that, and there is no case to say this, and I point to their brief, the IRS brief, and Judge Wells' brief, there is no case cited for the proposition that a husband and wife can't have a plan because it's automatically vested because the husband or wife has control over it, and therefore you could never not get the benefit.
Well, he said that a family couldn't do a plan like this. You got to have a corporation or got to have a partnership. A family, in other words, my wife and I can't go out and just set up a single employee plan. Employer plan, can we?
No, you need a business.
So that's not the fact that the husband and wife doesn't do it. Is you got to have a business.
Correct. And what he is saying is that because Mrs. Cadwell is 100% shareholder and Mr. Cadwell is an officer, that he automatically is deemed to have been vested in this plan, deemed to have received, constructively received, those assets because of those facts and those facts alone.
Well,
how can that be? Why are we treating husband and wife worse than partners?
They weren't divorced. I'm not understanding where you're going with that. Tell me again. Say it again so I can understand where you're going.
Under Almo, which we argue.
Well, Almo, the two points that you pointed out that were differentiating dealt with a distributed plan and one that was not a trust.
Well, all right. Where a trust comes in here is an exempt trust that distributes life insurance to someone. The person is considered to have received the full value of the policy. or if you're vested in it, you're considered to have received the full value of the policy. In a non-exempt trust, that's not the case. That's not what the case law says. That's not what the regulations say. And the regulations don't exactly mirror the tax code either in this instance, because they give examples of annuities, not life insurance. And the two are very different vehicles. But be that as it may, to get to where the judge was in that ruling, he ignored the vesting schedule, he ignored the plan documents, he ignored the fact that it was a business and filed income tax returns every year, and he ignored the fact that Mr. Cadwell was not an employee of KSM. He was not an employee of KSM. He was a partner.
I thought he was a manager.
He was a manager, but that does not make him an employee. And as we already stipulated, he received no compensation.
Well, how is it an employee plan? It's an employee plan. So he's not a part of that? I thought the words were multiple benefit employee plan and single employee plan, and you say he's not an employee.
I can't argue with the facts. That's why I go back to saying where we started today,
well,
with me saying
to
nothing happened.
How was the contribution made for him on a plan if he's not? Was that illegal, or was the corporation or the partnership doing something wrong?
If he's not
an employee, how do you have an employee plan?
I understand.
Well, help me to understand.
I understand the question. I don't necessarily have the answer, Judge. I know what happened.
Could it be that he was an employee?
Well, if he was, then he should receive.
At least treated for purposes of the plan as an employee.
As an employee. He did not receive compensation, is all I'm saying.
Well, according to this opinion, he did receive compensation. He got $100,000 out of this life insurance issue.
But he never received that, and he never had the right to take it either.
Well, he never received it. You're talking about he didn't. Somebody brought $100,000 in cash there and gave it to him. But he was vested in it, substantially vested.
Okay.
And that makes it a taxable event, according to the IRS.
According to the IRS.
That's the question we got here, and your red light's on.
May I finish?
Go ahead.
Thank you. The vesting was pursuant to a schedule. And according to that, he was not vested, number one. Number two, the way they get to him actually getting constructive receipt is that Mrs. Cadwell or he could terminate the plan on 30 days' notice, which is exactly the same as the previous plan. No change there. And in that instance, if you look at the court's opinion, in the instance that they terminated the plan, he did not and would not get that life insurance policy. There were four things that could happen to that life insurance policy. First of all, it went to Keedy.
I think that's a little more than just summing up.
I'm sorry.
The red light is on.
Understood.
You just stand there for a second. Let's see if Judge Traxler
thinks
anything.
I don't have any questions. I appreciate the arguments of Mr. Ryan and Mr. Futter. They've been both been very helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir.
Appreciate it. Have a good day.
And Judge Wynn and I will come down speak to the lawyers, and unless there's an objection, Judge Traxler, we'll call the next case.
Yes, sir.